Section 50, first column, middle of the page, although, I think, did we just do this? Although I'm not the Son of God, yeah. I don't know if you're concerned about this or not, but I racked my head over this one, four lines down. The binding and loosening take place in me. Now, they refer that to Matthew 18. Whoever ye shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whoever shall ye loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. But as far as I know, the binding in theology refers to Jacob and Isaac. So I'm not sure whether I'm missing something or they're missing something. That, remember that one that God says to Isaac? No, to Jacob.
Abraham.
Is it Abraham and Isaac?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Says to Abraham, go kill your son. And Abraham then binds Isaac. That's where the binding comes from, to kill him. And as this, whatever, the hatchet or sword's about to come down, God stays Abraham and says, no, you don't have to do it. So it's sort of this idea of, devoted faith or something like that. Of course, Jung puts himself here in the place of Isaac. That's how I read it. That he went into an experience where he could have been slaughtered, but was spared. I don't know. It's a detail.
I had a question that.
Yeah.
Reading the answer to Job. There's always that, whatever takes place here on earth, it's already taking place in the Pleroma.
Yeah.
And I thought it was saying, that what we break loose here or bind here, that's what's happened in heaven.
Well, that can't be right because the biblical quote is either to Abraham or to Jesus.
What does Matthew 18:18 mean then?
Don't
was explained in the Catholic Church was that had to do with your sins.
Yes.
That's why the priest had the capacity to forgive you in the name.
If you're greedy on earth and you bind yourself to earthly pleasures, that's what you're going to get in the afterlife.
You won't get anything in the afterlife.
Well, here you'll be bound. What is bound in the earth will be bound in heaven.
Yeah, it's more for like when if you hold a grudge against somebody, and you hate someone, and you don't ever forgive them, that binding of your psyche to theirs stays with you. So that's why it's so important to get rid of those things, because then you're looking forward to this great life in heaven, except your nemesis is just behind you constantly.
I was thinking of Dante's Inferno and all of those people in the various levels of hell that were bound to what they lived on the earth. So eternally, they were bound to greed and suffered accordingly.
I'm not sure exactly on what level, but it's the idea that what you sow here, you're going to reap up there. That's the Matthew reference.
Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis, in the Great Divorce, I don't know if you've read that, but he talks about this people who get on this bus and they go to heaven, and they have a choice if they can stay or not. Most of them don't want to stay. And some of the people, they have these symbolic things like a monkey on the shoulder and this and that. And so they chose not to go because they didn't want to get rid of their things.
It's a similar idea.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see how you'd apply that to Jung. The binding and loosening take place in me. I don't know. I went with I think it's called the Akita. Abraham and Isaac, where Isaac is bound and then he's loosened. And that Jung felt that he was Isaac about to be slaughtered and then was freed.
Well, that would mean he felt bound in his previous hero stock, right? All that complex
You could say that, yeah.
And now you're sitting, and then it's loosening. So the binding and loosening.
That's certainly possible.
What's especially interesting in light of the mosque and the picture that we saw is that in Islamic tradition, it's not Isaac, it's Ishmael who is bound.
Oh.
And God says no, because, you know, there's all this tension between Isaac and Ishmael, who's going to be the real heir. And so God says, well, just get rid of Ishmael. And so then God says, no, don't do that. And when he whispers and he sets him free to go create a new nation, and that is, you know, that's where the tension between Islam and Christianity really with Ishmael's birth. But I mean, it's very interesting that in Western tradition, the story is in all three major Western religions, but in one it's Ishmael, the other two is Isaac, and it means very different things because of Ishmael's heritage and birth. And
so it's really the birth of Islam.
Yeah, and I mean that story is so loaded with, you know, meaning. I mean, it's just so much in it.
That feels more right to me for some reason, but I don't know how you'd ever substantiate it. Remember the first line of Moby Dick?
Yeah.
Call me Ishmael.
It's just a little difficult thing that I thought the reference to Matthew was that the church was the ones who would do the forgiving. So you approached God and Jesus by the blood of the cross or whatever, your sins were forgiven. But the rules were now to be made by the church, where I thought you were saying, rather than the rules being made by the church, the rules are now made by the individual.
It makes sense.
That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
It makes more sense, actually.
Because otherwise, why would you use that particular footnote?
Well, that's the editor. That's not you.
Oh, that's the editor.
Yeah. Well, I think all of these have been possibilities. And then that next last paragraph, the last full paragraph on that column, might be worth reading, because what we're coming to now is we've had pleasure, we've had forethinking, we've had the union of the two, we've had the snake, which is following from the union of the two, and the snake is the same thing as the symbol. So what comes out of an endured passion, consciously accepted and lived, you might say, to make it really basic, lived while at the same time watching one's dreams, is a new symbol is created. That's how a real symbol is created, through living one's passion consciously. And that symbol would be the path of your life, would represent the path of your life, or at least the path of the next phase of your life.
The snake, then, is symbolizing the path?
Right.
Just like Tao.
Just like in the Tao, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure Jung then was drawn to the Tao, just noticing this parallelism. I don't think he would have come up with this imagery from having read it. But this came right out of the unconscious. So you see how we are slowly getting somewhere. And we might not get to it today, but on the next section, resolution, we'll see it does get resolved, and I think it's remarkable, but we might get to it today, let's see. So you see how incredible it was to believe such of oneself, that is to say, that here I think he's speaking to the church, that his inner process is valuable, and he's taken that very seriously, and look, he's saying, look where I've gotten. I've gotten the symbol. It applies not to me, but to the symbol. That symbol is going to be Jungian, is going to be what refers to Jungian psychology.
In footnote 195, it says, thus I become like the Buddha sitting in the flames.
Yes.
I don't know much about Buddhism. Is that, did Buddha get purified or something by sitting in?
I don't know either. I think, I can check on that, but I think what it means is that he's gone through all this passion, all this fire, but he has been able to find a place of stability within himself, either because of or in spite of what he's gone through. So he's saying, I'm getting somewhere.
Reminds me of that last line in the fire, in the rose are warming. Same thing, getting to that point.
Yeah, here I think the fire would be the fire or the pleasure, and the rose would be the serpent.
Okay.
I think.
So where is the wisdom?
Well, that apparently Eliot brought that to the experience himself. I don't know if it's symbolized in his poetry or not. Is it? Yeah.
What part of that from the book? What part of
it? I think it's us.
Okay.
Oh, the rest of that paragraph, which maybe I'll read, but it just emphasizes the importance of the symbol that he feels he has found through this fire, through this passion, through the longing. The symbol becomes my Lord, an unfailing companion, commander. It will fortify its reign and change itself into a starry and riddling image whose meaning turns completely inward, and whose pleasure radiates outward like a blazing fire, a Buddha in the flames. Because I sink into my... because I sink into my symbol. So he's showing us now how he will attempt to form a relationship to the symbol. Because I sink into my symbol to such an extent, the symbol changes me from my one into my other. And that cool goddess of my interior, my womanly pleasure, that's Salome. My own other, the tormented tormentor, that which is to be tormented. I have reinterpreted these images as best I can.
Kirian, striving toward wholeness, Barbara Hannah talks about the animus obscuring the self at first. Could we say that about the anima as well?
I'll say.
Okay, okay. And is that where he's at now? And when you're taken over by the pleasure, is it our anima and animus obscuring the self? You can't really see it yet, but you have to engage that.
I think what he's doing is saying once she is, well, that she's both blocking and revealing the self.
Okay.
But the way she enters is to block it. And the only way you can get her to reveal it is to go through her.
Okay.
Top of 250. That's the main idea. Now he just sort of gives some other thoughts. If you look for a light, you fall first into an even deeper darkness. So in this darkness you find a light with a weak reddish flame that gives only a low brightness, but it is enough for you to see your neighbor. So that darkness would be, I think, the Eros experience he was going through. Middle of the second paragraph, my own law had brought me to this place.
meaning his old moral code? Is that what you're
saying? No, I think it's his destiny.
Okay.
You know, he's saying to himself, stop whining, Jung. This is what you have to do, not because of any particular reason, but because of who you are.
Okay.
The next part, again, we've already discussed it, but he returns to the ego and self. As the God developed in me, I thought he was just part of myself. I thought that my I included him, and therefore I took him for my thought. But I also considered that my thoughts were parts of my I. Thus I entered into my thoughts and into the thinking about the God. And in that, I took him for a part of myself. So ego self, just thawing on him. Does that make sense, that paragraph? No?
Well, I mean, separating out the ego versus the self, that it's also parts of it that are in there together, right?
Let's see. As God developed in me, I thought he was part of myself. So that was the old idea that ego and self are one. That he is a God. That's his first thought. And then he realizes, no, that can't be right. As the God developed in me, I thought he was part of myself. I thought that my I included him, and therefore I took him for my thought. So there he's thinking he possesses God. And in that possession, he is godlike. In other words, inflated. And then he says, no, that my thoughts were part of my I. Thus I entered into my thoughts. So he's saying my thoughts weren't the same as me, but something within me. And therefore God is also something in me, not something I am. It's kind of convoluted, but the basic idea is he's distinguishing ego and self. We've done the next paragraph, and in the last paragraph, my thoughts are not myself. A little farther down, but man is domineering in his thinking, and therefore he kills the pleasure of the forest and that of the wild animals. So we did that before, right? That he is not his thoughts. And just like he is not his thoughts, since these God thoughts are in him, he is not the God thoughts. And he's realizing there's something he must not be that is in him.
In footnote 197, the third line down, he makes reference to the poisonous plants. Then my feeling became a poisonous plant.
Yeah.
Which refers back to his illustrations in the very beginning where he surrounds his text with poisonous healing plants.
Does he mean poisonous healing plants here?
Well, his feeling is what is something that awakens and leads him into his pleasure. So yes,
yeah,
it does heal him.
Yes, yes, you're right.
I'm sorry, I just have to. Poisonous leads him to what?
He says he describes his feeling as a poisonous plant in footnote 197.
Uh huh.
But when it awakens, it leads him to his pleasure. So it's a healing poisonous plant, just like the ones he depicted in his illustrations in the beginning. Do you remember that?
Yeah. So it's poisonous yet healing. Interesting.
This statement seems to reflect the nature of those plants that he illustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Poisonous yet healing.
Yeah, and at the same time, a poisonous yet healing.
Right.
So he doesn't want to accept these feelings because they're going against his idea of who he is, and that's the poison. it's interesting, at the beginning of a psychological journey, people often dream of being poisoned. And it's that the dreams contradict who they think they are, and that's felt as poisonous and depressing. Like diving, it's always something to watch. Does the person allow themselves to be poisoned or not? Usually it's a snake bite, or, you know, a nettle in a plant or something like that. And then 51. But as I, second paragraph, 251. But as I became aware of the freedom in my thought world, Salome embraced me, and thus I became a prophet. Since I had found pleasure in the primordial beginning, in the forest, and in the wild animals. So because he accepted his pleasure, Salome embraced him, and he became a prophet. Now, that's what the next section is going to explicate. That's just a description. That's like the trailer from the coming attraction. We'll see how that all happens. Now, he's saying, what he has said is, I fought this thing with Tony Wolf, and I finally had to give in, and something's going to come of it. The last two paragraphs are murder. Do you feel up to murder? it's not easy. I really had to bust my head on this one. But we're going to get the image of the lion in these last two paragraphs. And the image of the lion is going to resolve everything we've done up to now. So that's what I thought it might be worth going into. It will appear in the next chapter resolution. Okay, let's try. Just as my thinking is the son of forethinking. Does that make sense? So he's saying he's learned how to think with symbols. So is my pleasure the daughter of love. Meaning, if he accepts his pleasure, it's going to get him to a higher understanding of love. Probably personal love, but also the love of his creativity. The love of what he's going to create. Skip a little bit. Aside from Christ, Mary gave birth to Salome. So see, it's bringing Salome into line with what's divine in Jungian language with the self. So that by going through Salome, he's going to approach the self. Therefore, Christ in the Gospel of the Egyptians says to Salome, eat every herb, but do not eat the bitter. And when Salome wanted to know, Christ spoke to her, if you crush the covering of shame, and when the two become one, and the male with the female, neither male nor female. Now, I don't know if you want to go into all that or not. There's a whole story behind that. But what, to make it simple, what I might just rest with is he's bringing in a Gnostic quote which describes redemption as a union of male and female. That's the point of it. We can go to the background of it if you want, but it's kind of confusing.
You say redemption?
Yeah.
But it's a union that creates something that's neither male nor female, so
yes.
It's out of the two.
Yes.
They become one, but they create something else.
Right. So you could think of the Salome, Elijah, the two, and then the one that's created is the snake.
Okay.
So resulting in a thing neither male nor female?
Right.
What is created then out of that union is the symbol? Is that what you're saying?
You could say it. You could put it that way. Yeah, it's the symbol. The symbol is a representation of the meaning. The symbol is a representation of the meaning, which is the same as his path in life, which is the same as Jungian psychology. As all this resolves, probably not till the next page, the resolved image, I think, is a portrait of Jungian psychology. So that's what he's struggling to give birth to. Not only is it a portrait of Jungian psychology, but that image contains some of the main features of Jungian psychology. That's all the exciting things that lie ahead. Reward you for your patience or bad judgment, depending on how you want to understand it.
A sad statement, if you crush the covering of shame.
Yeah.
And you said there's a whole story behind it, but is he saying that if you can work your way through to get through shame. If you get through shame, then you can get to the meaning.
No, I hadn't thought of that, Jane, but that's certainly possible. Let me give you the background for this thing, and you can figure it out. Because here again, who knows? What you say is certainly possible. It's a reference to down in the footnote. To a Gnostic text, which is very weird. In the Gnostic text, Christ and Salome are talking. And Christ says, and this is the unpleasant part of it, women shouldn't have children. And Salome says, well, it's a good thing I didn't have kids. And Salome is saying, you know, when's all this misery going to end? And he says, when you tread underfoot the covering of shame, and when out of the two is made one, and the male and the female, neither male nor female. You follow that text at least?
So, symbolically, death is overcome
right.
by the union of male and female, neither
right.
male nor female.
Right, right.
Yeah. Symbolically, death is overcome by the union of the male and female, neither male nor female. So, were you going to go on with this footnote at all?
Yes, because it makes no sense.
No.
Thank you. Death in that, you say symbolically, death is overcome.
Yeah.
Is that a symbolic death? Or is that a psychic death?
Yeah. Hang on a second. See, the problem is, I think, and remember, this is just Jung's primary process here, right? That the real point isn't the shame, isn't Salome, isn't don't have kids. The real point that he wants to make, which he refers to in the Vision Seminar, page 524, which footnote refers us to, is that he just says, look how in antiquity images of union represent the healed condition. That's his point. We get tracked off on shame, we get tracked off on Salome, we get off the track on don't have kids. But all he's saying is, I'm not the first guy who said union of male and female is redemption. That's why he's bringing that quote here. Now, whether you want to take it further and say, oh, what about the shame? I don't know. I think he's simply as a sort of associative moment in his fantasy, bringing up a text where union equals redemption. That's his point. See, he 20 years later, he would have brought in an alchemical text. He didn't know alchemy now. So he brought in a Gnostic text with a whole lot of other terms associated to it. But what he's really driving at is union. Union as goal. Union as final point. Because what he's going to try to do in the next section is explicate how it is that Elijah and Salome have led to the snake. That's how I make sense of it.
Is that then, I mean, male was the spiritual, the female was the body, and when you
yeah, right,
get that together.
Or in what we, in terms that we've gone on before, is the male is forethinking, the female is pleasure. And he's saying, I'm not just a nut for wrestling with these two, because these two really do want to join. And what I'm trying to do is find out practically, how do you do that? And then what's it look like when you do? I think that's why you put that quote in. But you're tempted to go off on the shame image or the, you know, the childbirth image. But what he's just saying is, hey, look, here's an image of union as redemption. And you get that in all of Jung later, but he didn't have all of Jung later at this point. He only knew a little bit of Gnosticism. That was the first thing he studied.
Okay, so redemption equals symbolic redemption to overcome. So,
yes.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
So when he says, aside from Christ, Mary gave birth to Salome, is that his way of saying that God has a shadow, that God is the ultimate union of male and female, just being either?
Well, certainly to the latter, yes.
Okay.
I think to the former, remember, he's about to commit adultery. And it bothers him. And he's saying, this is a divine command. I have to do this. You go to church, I have an affair, and one is no less sacred than the other. I think that's what he's saying to himself. Of course, you'd say this in public, you get machine gunned to death. But again, I put before you the people I know who are alive, because he did do that. And I think he knew that he was about to create something of extreme importance, which he felt terribly guilty for as a sinner, and was telling himself, but this sin is something that God is asking me to do. That's my understanding.
So it is good to meet you. Concretize.
He was concretizing the conjunctio. Well, yes, I think you could say that. Or he was following a concrete path to release the forces that he would unite pleasure and forethinking.
Okay.
And this is the blood experience. Now, I wish we had more time to get to it today, but where we're going is we'll see as this, as Salome and I'll put it very simply. It'll be a little bit more complicated than this, but as Salome and Elijah unite, Jungian psychology is born. Maybe I'll just give you a foreshadowing, because so you have something to hang on to. What happens is the snake wraps itself around Jung. Salome gets her sight back. She can see. And he turns into a lion-headed man. That's in this next chapter. Well, look here, folks. Zion. He becomes Zion. See, that's the birth of Jungian psychology. Why is Ion the birth of Jungian psychology? Because Jung's understanding of the different ions in Western history are the basis of the way he created his psychology. His psychology is not just a psychotherapeutic system. It's an attempt to understand what history demands that we do in psychotherapy. What history demands psychotherapy to be. So he based his psychology on the understanding of a historical process, not just on a vis-a-vis between himself and another. So all of this is leading up to Jung becoming Ion, which I understand to mean having the breadth of knowledge it takes to develop a psychology that takes account of the historical situation. It's the historical situation that led him into it in the first place, when you remember all of this started with the images of World War I. So he's addressing those images of World War I and then anticipating, I don't think intentionally, but his work anticipates the psychology behind World War II as he creates Jungian psychology. And I think something in him must have known that the only way he could get to this point of view was through the union of Salome and Elijah. Salome starts to see, which means he has resolved his Adamic problem. Because the blindness of Salome was his not knowing what in the world he was doing with these women, but knowing he had to do something with them. And when he does that, Salome sees and Elijah evaporates in a burst of light. So that Elijah turns into pure insight. That insight would be the insight that he brought to his work for the next 50 years. So see, all of that is implied in that little sentence, Salome embraced me and I became a prophet. What we're going to see in the resolution is step by step what that looks like. And see, he couldn't have gotten there if he hadn't had Salome with him. And he couldn't have gotten there without Elijah either. He needed both. It's also why I think this book's so important. This is like the metastructure of his psychology. This one. Ion. He named it for the god. This is a figure of in Mithraic religion, and it's the god Ion. A-I-O-N, which is the origin of our word eon. So the guy actually didn't know what he was doing. In the dark, just knowing I had to be with this woman. I don't know why, but I'm going to do it.
But it had to be Toni Wolff, because there were other women that he could have been attracted to. He was surrounded by lots of women. I'm sure they were attracted to him. He was very charismatic, very handsome man. But it had to be Toni Wolff for a specific reason, and it was because of her abilities. Is that correct? Is that
how I would say... Probably yes.
Okay.
This is only my opinion. I guess I kind of, there's an oral tradition, and then there's the books So the oral tradition is where I absorbed this, that she had the imaginative abilities that he needed, that Emma didn't have. Yeah. And I think he was beginning to, I think he had had enough bad experiences with women to say, here I go again. How do I stop doing this?
But she had enough knowledge. Could she have had enough knowledge at this point of the unconscious and an ability to go there? I mean, I would think of a person who has a lot of imagination and creative ability has the strength to step into the unconscious world and bring things out of it without being taken over by it. And I just wonder if she didn't have that
capacity. I think she must have, yeah. Okay. I don't think either of them had psychological knowledge, what we call psychological knowledge yet. Well, they had Freudian psychological knowledge. They didn't have Jungian psychological knowledge because that hadn't even been developed yet. But I think she must have had that sort of adventuresome feeling that, you know, how some people get excited about a new artist because it hits them. She must have known that Jung was wrestling with something important and got interested in it and could be with him in that regard.
So at a concrete level, could you say that Emma was sort of, in his day-to-day life, Emma was Elijah and Tony was Salome?
Hmm. Well, I don't think I'd say that. I'd say that, well, maybe, certainly, Salome was released with Tony. And it could be that Emma did, in a way, activate the kind of stable continuity of involvement that supported him in that. That could be, very well be. Problem is, you know, I don't trust the biographies, and so we can guess, but just so you know, it's my guesswork. I don't think any biographer that's written on you, other than von Franz, you know, those people, they're not really biographies, they're more testaments, understand what Jung did and why he did it and how he did it. Well, let's see. We got through. Where do we start? 249. Mm-hmm. Well, a page and a half. A page and a third.
Congrats.
But I think by the time you get to next week and you watch the creation of, I'll tell you where it is. If you want to really pay attention. It's at the top of 252. The serpent has wound itself around my whole body, and my countenance is that of a lion. It goes on. So where do we stop? We stopped at the paragraph. We stopped before the paragraph beginning, "For thinking is the procreative," right? I think it was worth going through this with some care because this is the first time in the next paragraph he mentions the lion. And the lion is going to be what appears in the next section as an image of Ion. Which I think is, for me, that's what Jungian psychology is, an attempt to be true to the understanding of what history is. And that's one of its strengths. So, I don't think we'll get through anything more than that next time. If you feel like it, you could read in the Liber Secundus to 261. I doubt whether we'll get that far, but if we do, you'll be prepared. Stop before the castle in the forest. Uh-huh. hopefully when we get to that next section, you'll see where all this has been going and why it's so important that we went this way. Okay, thank you. I'll see you in two.
It would be so fascinating to have Emma and Tony's dreams from this time period to see what everyone's dreams were saying and if that had an effect on the decisions that were made. I just have to believe that that was all working together.
Yeah, well, I told you the guy I worked with the two of them.
Meyer.
Yeah. C.A. Meyer.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he wouldn't have. I'm sure he wouldn't have answered that question if I had asked him. What were they dreaming, Dr. Meyer? Okay. None of your business.
We're left to our imagination.
But it did, to me, it just said that it was a team.
Mm-hmm, it was.
And I like what you said, that they were redefining what love is, and it was love of me. And they knew something meaningful was being created. Okay, we're done. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, home.